Hello and welcome to another episode of It's About Time, a DC Sports Podcast. I thank you all for joining us. It is March 26th. We are now 2 days away from opening day for the Washington Nationals and for Major League Baseball. The Nationals will open up Thursday the 28th at 1:05. Probably the best pitching matchup of the day, opening day-wise. I mean, you have the reigning Cy Young winner, Jacob DeGrom, against Max Scherzer, who has won two of the last three National League Cy Young Awards. It's going to be a great day. The weather looks like it's going to be beautiful. I will be there. It's a yearly tradition. Me and my old man, we go. We already have our tickets. We are all set. I'm looking forward to that. I expect it to be a quick game with really the two best pitchers in baseball. And DeGrom, fresh off of an extension today, should be a lot of fun. Great kickoff, another year where expectations are relatively high for the Nationals. And they're high for me. I feel like this year going to be less drama, should be a lot of fun. This podcast is going to be all about the Nats season preview. We are 2 days away from the start of the season. Everybody's optimistic. Everybody's 0-0. And we're going to kind of go through the storylines of the season. I've got four big ones. Actually, five. We'll go through best case, worst case, and then most likely scenarios of how the season wraps up. And then I'll kind of break down the division and just lay out where I have the current rankings of the four teams. I don't count the Marlins. Where the Nats shake out there, comparing their rotations, lineups, bullpens. All of this stuff, of course, subject to change throughout the year when you talk about injuries, when you talk about trades. The deadline will be a big deal this year for the National League East. It really does feel like, in a lot of ways, a lot of the talent got dumped into the National League East this year. It's going to be a lot of fun. I mean, it's one of those things where in years past, 2012 to 2018, actually, if you take 2018 out of it, 2012 to 2017, most of the in-division games for the Nationals were kind of snooze fests. You know, the Phillies, they weren't much. The Mets, outside of 2015, they weren't much. The Marlins haven't been much. And the Braves, I mean, they were there a couple of times. But the Nats, usually, when they won the division, they ran away with it. This year, you have 19 games against the Phillies, the Mets, and the Braves. 60 games, 57 games, really, that are going to be knockdown, drag-out street fights. And I can't wait. I really can't wait. It's going to be amazing. And then you're still going to have six games or seven games against the Dodgers, games against the Rockies, the Cardinals, the Reds, who are much improved, the Brewers. The National League is very deep. And the Nats are going to have a lot of games this year that are going to be high intensity. And it's going to be a lot of fun. It's, you know, the games against the Marlins, they're going to pale in comparison. Their stadium's going to be 5,000 strong, and it's just going to be dead there. And you're going to be used to seeing full-throated crowds most places that the Nats go, hopefully also at Nats Park. It's going to be a fun season, man. I'm really looking forward to it. I'm a junkie when it comes to the Nationals. I watch just about every game, and I can't get enough of it. My wife calls it an obsession. But I am excited, so that's why this podcast is all about, it's a Nats season preview for me. Before we get jumped into that, we are affiliated with the DMVSportsNetwork.com. That is the DMVSportsNetwork.com. They can be reached on Twitter at DMV_SN. They have a bevy of great podcasts. Check them out. All things DC sports. They also have a little bit of national sports mixed in. And again, a podcast I've talked about it the last 2 weeks that I really enjoy. It's an all-Nationals podcast called Half Street High Heat. Give it a listen. It's a great listen, especially if you're as big of a Nationals fan as I am. But yeah, check out DMV Sports Network. Check us out. It's About Time DC1. That's ITS About Time DC1 on Twitter. And give us a follow. Subscribe to our podcast, wherever you listen to podcasts, Google, Spotify, iTunes, and rate us. You know, all the ratings we can get are the best, and comments, things of that nature. We really appreciate those of you that listen, those of you that provide feedback. We're always Very happy about that. I'm about to cough. Excuse me. All right. Let's get into the storylines of the season. I have not put these in any particular order, order of importance or anything like that. Just kind of off the top of my head, the first things that came to my head. So the first thing, and we actually talked about him last week, storyline of the season for me, can Juan Soto improve or will he suffer a sophomore slump? Now, his season last year was one for the ages, one of the best 19-year-old seasons of all time. We broke down last week how he compared to other 19-year-olds who were eventual Hall of Famers. His season last year, for those of you that need a reminder, he had a .292 batting average, .406 on base, had a .923 OPS, 22 homers in 116 games, and 70 RBI. Can't get much better at a 19-year-old season. Better 19-year-old season than Bryce Harper. Better 19-year-old season than Mickey Mantle, Ken Griffey Jr., Mike Trout. Does that lead to him being better than them? No, it doesn't. I mean, I'm not going to begin to say that. But what it does tell me is that this guy, you know, you can't start off much better. And then let's talk about the spring that he's had. He finished spring training with a .333 batting average, .450 on base, and an OPS at 1.117. He had 3 home runs in 20 games, 13 RBI, and he walked 11 times, only struck out 9. It's spring. I don't put a whole bunch of stock into spring, but if he was batting 167 in spring, there'd be a bit of concern. He didn't. He did what he had to do. So, yeah, you know, I watched him yesterday when the Nats played the Yankees, spring training game in D.C., and he had a nice opposite field double to left center. Swing looks great. His confidence is there. I think that of any guy coming into his sophomore season, he is the most prepared for success. I like Ronald Acuna with the Braves as well. I think they're both going to have fantastic seasons. I think Soto takes a step forward. Am I being a bit homerish there? I could be. But this guy, his swing is just so on point, and his power is so effortless. And he's a worker. He's a real worker. I mean, he went to Japan with the Major League All-Stars. Then he went to the Dominican, to the Nats Academy. He was working out 4 days a week there. The guy is putting in the work to be a legit major leaguer. I expect big things from him. What are big things for Juan Soto? For me, I think full season, 30 home runs aren't out of the question. I think a batting average around .300 and on-base percentage around .400 or just slightly over aren't out of the question for him. And if he hits those marks with 80 or 90 RBI, it's a fantastic season for a 20-year-old. I mean, let's be real. And he's going to have protection. He's going to have Turner in front of him, Rendon, Zimmerman, and Dozier behind him. He's going to have protection, and it's going to be a tough thing, and we'll get to this when we talk about the Nats lineup. It's going to be a tough thing. Who do you focus on if you're facing the Nationals? Do you focus on Soto? Do you focus on Rendon? Big question marks. Who do you focus on? I don't think it's a lineup that you can pitch around one person and feel like you're comfortable. I think if you're going to pitch around one person, you have to choose between Juan Soto and Anthony Rendon. They're back-to-back, lefty-righty. But I expect him to have a pretty solid year this year. The biggest question mark for him is how he plays in left field. He looked a bit like a fish out of water there last year. He played okay. I mean, he didn't play terribly. He played okay. But that will continue to be a learning process. He will have gaffes in left field as he plays a full season. I'm hoping that he improves throughout the season there. But again, he's not playing for you because of his defense. He was rushed to the major leagues. Defense wasn't major league ready yet. His defense will come along. I don't think he'll ever be a gold glover, although with his work ethic, maybe he will be. But you don't need him to be a gold glover. You need him to hit 30-plus homers, get on base at a .400 clip, and I think he can do that for you. So will he improve? I think he will. I don't think that he'll suffer what they call a sophomore slump. I mean, even if he gives you what he gave you last year, you got to feel pretty good. Next storyline, the Nationals' starting rotation. They're paying $96 million to their 5 starters. It's a lot of money. They've got like over $500 million in total value invested in Strasburg, Scherzer and Corbin. Big things are expected. They gave Anibal Sanchez a 2-year deal. They brought back Jeremy Hellickson. It might be the deepest rotation in all of baseball. And it's certainly one of the best. I don't know if I'd call it the best, but it's one of the best rotations in all of baseball. So, what are the question marks? What are the things that could worry you? Well, Max will be 35 this year. He has shown remarkable, really remarkable durability. And it's one of those things that you do start to worry, will his age start to show? I don't know. He's like an enigma to me. I mean, it's amazing that he's been able to do what he's been able to do. If you look at his last 6 seasons, he's been over 200 innings for all 6 seasons. He's made at least 31 starts in each of the last 6 years. Actually, he's made at least 30 starts in every season since 2009. The guy is as durable as they come. And again, we've talked about this. He's finished in the top 5 in Cy Young voting in each of the last 6 years. He's won 3 Cy Youngs and finished twice once. Max is going to be Max. Is he going to be the best pitcher in baseball? That might be a little bit lofty for a guy his age, but his velocity looks like it's still there. His work ethic and his demeanor are still there. Max is going to be Max. Then you go to Steven Strasburg. Stras has all of the stuff. He really does. He's still got mid-90s fastball when he needs it. Wipeout changeup. Dynamite curveball. His real question is not his stuff. It's his durability. Contrary to Max, he has not pitched 200 innings since 2014. He pitched 175 innings in 2017, but other than that, he's been under 150 in 3 of the last 4 years. And he made 28 starts in 2017. Other than that, he's been at 24 starts or less in 3 of the last 4 years. He has battled injuries. He has had durability concerns. In my opinion, Strasburg is the most important person on this team this year. If Strasburg stays healthy and is healthy in August and September, the Nationals are World Series contenders. If he's hurt or he's not 100% going into August and September, the Nats are going to have some concerns. They need Strasburg to be healthy. They need him to be at his best August, September, and October. Will he be? They say that he's been, you know, throttling it down a bit, that he's been working on his mechanics. I don't doubt his work ethic. I don't doubt the effort that he's put in. Will he be? I can't say whether he will be or not. I hope he will be. And I hope that Davey is smart with him. I hope that Davey is willing to jump in and skip him a start. Give him some rest. Give him an extra day or two when need be. I hope he's willing to do that. I'm hoping he's willing to do that with Max too. I know that Max probably wouldn't want that, but you need Max to be his most effective also at the end of the season. I know that games are just as important throughout the entire season, but you want, if you're going to be heading into the postseason, you want your 3 horses to be at top speed, ready to go. Let's get to Patrick Corbin. He pitched 200 innings last year. He's a Tommy John guy. First time he had pitched 200 innings since prior to Tommy John in 2013. He missed the entire 2014 season, and then he ramped up. He went 85 innings, 155, and then he pitched 190 in 2017. His numbers have consistently gotten better since coming back from Tommy John, but last year was by far his best season, and he got paid for it. He finished 5th in Cy Young. Is he that guy from 2018, or is he the guy from 16 and 17 who had a combined mid-4 ERA? I think we're probably seeing the real him. He pitched exactly 200 innings last year, had a 3.15 ERA. 246 strikeouts. I think that, you know, when you come back and you're 3 full years removed from Tommy John, I think that's who we should expect. I think that he is ascending, and I think the Nats made a good pickup there. And with less pressure on him because he will be pitching behind Scherzer and Strasburg, I think Corbin will flourish in D.C. I really do. But again, durability concerns. He is a Tommy John guy. Got to keep him healthy. I think he'll stay healthy, but something to think about. And then you got Sanchez and Helixson. Sanchez had a renaissance last year with Atlanta. He's turned himself. He used to be kind of a power pitcher. Now he's more of a finesse pitcher. He's had a great spring. They signed him to a two-year deal. I think Sanchez is going to provide much-needed depth to the rotation, and he's going to give you some big starts. Helixson, I'd go as far out to say as he's probably the best fifth starter in all of baseball. Most underappreciated. Davey didn't let him go past really the second time through the order last year, kind of limited him to four, five, six innings a start. I don't know if that's going to be his MO again this year, but Helixson, when he's working the corners, working the off-speed stuff, he's tough to hit. He's tough to hit, and he's a gamer, and he knows how to win ball games. So he rounds out their rotation. I feel really good about it. But Helixson battled injuries last year too. We're going to see a sixth starter, maybe even a seventh starter, have to come up. You're talking about Joe Ross. You're talking about Eric Fetty. We're going to see those guys at some point. You're just hoping if it's Stras that it's only a 15 or 20-day thing. If it's Helixson or Sanchez, same deal. You know, we really don't want to see Scherzer on the DL. But you got to feel good about the Nats starting rotation. Again, one of the best in baseball. And I think they're going to carry this team throughout the season. Storyline number three for me, how good is the bullpen? A couple weeks ago I talked about, I mean, if there's something, if you got to be worried about something, to me it's the bullpen. I know that seems like a every year thing for the Nats, except for last year. Last year we went into the season thinking the bullpen was set. This year, I mean, you've got your back end anchor. You've got Sean Doolittle. He's been lights out since joining the Nationals. The closer position is his. There's no question there. But he's a couple years removed from shoulder issues. He had foot issues last year. If he spends a prolonged period of time on the DL for any particular reason, the Nats are going to have some issues. They have Bearclaw and Rosenthal that will be pitching the 7th and 8th. I think Rosenthal's your 8th inning guy. Bearclaw is probably your 7th inning guy. And they both have great stuff. Rosenthal, 100-plus fastball. But he was off last year because of Tommy John. He's still coming back. Usually when you first come back from Tommy John, there are days that you have pinpoint accuracy, and then there are days when you scatter the ball all over the place. You're going to see some of that from Rosenthal. You've seen it in spring training. He has had some issues with control in spring training. Same with Kyle Bearclaw. Bearclaw, that's followed him throughout his career. He's had control issues. His whip has always been higher than it should have been. Walks and hits per innings pitched has always been higher than it should have been. He's usually around 1.3, 1.4. You like to see a pitcher around 1 when it comes to whip. Those two guys have got to step it up this year, because if you don't have a bridge from the starting rotation to Doolittle, you're going to see late inning leads that are blown. So those two guys have to step it up. I'm a bit concerned about it. I think, and I'll talk about this when we get to best case, worst case, I think that the Nats are going to have to add an arm at some point this season, whether it's by trade or signing a free agent for their bullpen. I think right now, if you're looking at the three facets of the game, pitching, lineup, bullpen, I think the bullpen is going to be your biggest concern. And it won't take much to derail the bullpen. And that's got to be something that, you know, they added Tony Sipp. He provides great length to the bullpen. He's a lefty specialist. He and Matt Grace are going to be going after the lefties. Grace is going to be kind of a multi-inning guy. Sipp will be a one or two batter guy. It's great, but you got to worry a little bit about the depth of the bullpen. Along the same lines with bullpen, what kind of progression does Wander Suero have? If Suero steps forward, had a good season last year for his first season in major leagues. Last year, he appeared in 40 games, had an ERA of, had an ERA of 3.59 in 40 games, pitched 47 innings. Nice season for a guy who's pitching his first season in the Major League, 47 strikeouts and 47 innings. Had some control issues at times with 15 walks in 47 innings. But if he takes a step forward, then that's another arm they get to add. Then you're talking about Grace, Sipp, Suero, Bearclaw, Rosenthal, Doolittle. It's a pretty good bullpen. Could be better, but it's a pretty good bullpen. So Wander Suero will be a big storyline in their bullpen this year. What kind of step does he take forward? I think that'll be an interesting thing to see. Is he still with the big club at the trade deadline? Or is he sent back down to the minors? To me, Wander Suero, big story when it comes to the bullpen. Then, I was talking with my uncle the other day. His biggest concern with the Nationals is their offense. I don't have that big of a concern with the offense, but let's talk about it. How does the offense produce without Bryce? Is one of the big questions. Bryce last year, you know, he got on base by walking and he hit home runs. But beyond that, didn't do much offensively. He was a presence, though. The people that batted around him, Rendon, Soto, Zimmerman, they saw better pitches because of Bryce. That's undeniable, because of the legend of Bryce. That's not going to be there this year. So the load is going to be carried by Juan Soto, Anthony Rendon, Ryan Zimmerman, and the top of the lineup. Let's talk about the lineup for a second, the way it's going to shape up. Adam Eaton's going to be your leadoff guy. That's his most comfortable position in the lineup. That's what he's meant to do. He's a grinder. He gets on base. Trey Turner's going to be batting second. And the big storyline to me is that Victor Robles is going to be batting ninth. And your pitcher is going to be batting eighth. Two things with that. And I read a good article today about that. But two things about that. One, I think it takes pressure off of Robles. He's essentially in that second leadoff slot. But because Eaton, Turner, and Soto will be batting behind him, he's going to see a lot of fastballs. Takes pressure off of Robles. Puts pressure on whoever's batting in the seven hole, most likely Yan Gomes, Kurt Suzuki. Those guys, because they're batting in front of the pitcher, are going to get pitched around a lot, and they're going to have to show patience. I think that they'll be able to do that. I think you want to put it on Kurt Suzuki, who's 35 years old, Yan Gomes, who was an all-star last year. You don't want to put it on a 21-year-old rookie in Victor Robles. It's an interesting lineup design. And the article I read today, I wish I could credit the person who wrote it. I can't remember who wrote it. I think it might have been Barry Zvirluga, but I could be wrong. Forgive me for that. But it was in the Washington Post. And it basically said that Eaton, because Robles will be batting ninth, Eaton is a 1-2 hitter. Oh, it might have been Boswell, actually. Anyway, Eaton is a 1-2 hitter. So he's a leadoff guy when he leads off an inning, but he's more like a 2 hitter when Robles is batting in front of him later in the game. And that makes Turner a 2-3 hitter. So Turner's a 2 guy who might need to be an on-base guy, steal some bases, but he's also could be a 3 hitter if Robles and Eaton get on in front of him. And Turner's a kind of guy with power who can drive in runs. I think you'll see more RBIs from Turner because he's batting in the 2 hole. I don't think that Turner will run as much with Juan Soto batting in front of him, but we'll see how that shakes out. I like Eaton in the leadoff position, and I also don't think that the Nats are going to have issues offensively. Will their power suffer? Maybe a little bit, but they essentially, if you want to talk about how their lineup is different, they're essentially replacing Bryce Harper, who hit 30-some home runs last year, with Brian Dozier, who is capable of hitting 30 home runs. Or you could say they're replacing him with Robles. I mean, you could look at it either way. But I think if you're talking about just from power perspective, you're replacing Harper with Dozier. Dozier will hit less home runs than Harper, but not by much. And the Nats lineup this year is going to be much longer than it was last year. Last year, you had at times 2 position players that weren't giving you much offensively. If Michael A. Taylor was playing, you had him and whoever was catching, whether it was Matt Wieters, Pedro Severino, even Spencer Keyboom, they didn't get anything from their catching position last year. So there were times when a third of their lineup was not producing anything. That's not going to be the case this year. This year, you still have your pitcher hitting, but you expect Robles to be able to get on base, and your catching position is much improved with the addition of Kurt Suzuki and Yan Gomes. I don't think they're going to have trouble scoring runs. Will they hit for less power? Probably, but I also think they're going to manufacture more runs because of smart base running, timely hitting. I think it's actually going to be a more fun team to watch offensively than it was last year. So I don't think the offense is as big a concern as some people do. And my final storyline of the season is Davey Martinez ready to improve? He clearly had issues last year at times. He had issues running the bullpen, which came out during the All-Star break that some of the people in the bullpen weren't happy with him. And I think that last year, he had issues commanding the locker room. Now, was that a Davey thing or was that another person's thing? I'm going to put stock in. I think that was because of the presence who's no longer with the team. The storyline that has been talked about over and over again this offseason, the clubhouse seems lighter. You know, last year you had 24 guys playing by one set of rules and one guy playing by another. It's different this year. Davey is fully in command of the ship. They focused heavily on fundamentals this offseason or this spring. And he said that that he expects it to carry into the season. I think Davey will improve. The big question will be how he handles his bullpen. And it's a big question for any National League manager, how he handles his bullpen. He's been given a pretty deep bench. When Howie Kendrick gets back, you have Kendrick, you have Matt Adams, you have either Yan Gomes or Kurt Suzuki, whoever's not playing that day, Wilmer Defoe, who's a gamer. But it'll be how he manages his bullpen. Can't burn those guys out early in the season. He's got to be confident in every arm he has out there. And also how Rizzo handles the bullpen situation as they go throughout the season. If he identifies a need, he needs to have the flexibility to go out and get somebody, whether it's signing a free agent that might still be available, wink, wink, Craig Kimbrell, or trading for somebody. Got to strike while your team is ready to strike. Got to strike while the iron is hot. And the Nats usually do that. So they did it last year with Kelvin Herrera. It just didn't work out. Surprisingly didn't work out. I mean, that guy, his track record was amazing. And he just really kind of folded here in D.C. and then blew out his Achilles. But yeah, is Davey ready to improve? I think he is. I mean, I don't think that he's Alex Cora. But I think he's ready to improve. So those to me are the storylines, the five storylines. Juan Soto, the starting rotation, how good the bullpen can be or how bad it could be. How does the offense produce without Bryce? And then Davey Martinez. So let's get into, for the Nats, what's their worst case scenario? What's their best case scenario? And what's kind of most likely? What's in the middle? I mean, you always have a best case, worst case, and then most likely. And I've kind of broken it down. I'm going to start with what I think their worst case scenario is. Their worst case scenario is a lot like last year. They finish around 500 or maybe slightly below. Big storyline of the season is going to be that the bullpen struggles. And the team has periods of time when they don't score runs because of a lack of power. Juan Soto regresses and has a second season, which is less impactful than his first. And Victor Robles has a tough year adjusting to Major League Baseball for a full season. Strasburg has at least one stint on the injured list. And Scherzer starts to show signs of aging. Anibal Sanchez kind of regresses back to where he was prior to last year and kind of shows that last year was a bit of a fluke. Davey loses his job at the end of this season and maybe Mike Rizzo too. It would be hard if they missed the playoffs and finish at or under 500 for Mike Rizzo to keep his job after he spent over $200 million on the roster. It's going to be a difficult thing, especially if you're beat out by the Phillies who took Bryce Harper. It's going to take a confluence of all of those things, bullpen struggling, offense being patchy, which happened last year, Soto regressing, Robles not really living up to his potential this year, and then Strasburg and Scherzer kind of coming back, or Scherzer coming back down to earth and Strasburg continuing to battle injuries. If all of that happens and they finish 81-81 or slightly better or slightly worse, you could see major overhauls with this team next year. And that's the worst case scenario for the Nats. Not the likely one, just the worst case scenario. I think we can all agree that what happened last year was the worst case scenario going into the season. They were the favorite to win the National League East. They were one of the World Series contenders. That was their worst case, what happened last year. You started the season with offensive issues. In the middle of the season, you had rotation issues. And at the end of the season, you had bullpen issues. I mean, it was just really a Murphy's Law. As soon as one part of the team got healthy, another part of the team went down with injury. an injury can derail any team, really. So that's their worst case. What's their best case? This is the case I like talking about. Strasburg, Corbin, and Scherzer all finish in the top 10 in Cy Young voting. The Nats are only 2 years removed from having that happen with Scherzer, Strasburg, and Gio Gonzalez. Juan Soto contends for an MVP. I think he's fully capable of that. Victor Robles contends for Rookie of the Year. Tom Verducci actually picked Robles to win the National League Rookie of the Year this year. Rendon gets an extension from the Nats and continues to be the best-kept secret in the National League. You know, something around 25 to 30 homers, 100 ribbies, and Gold Glove caliber defense. Corbin justifies his contract, continues to ascend. Nats win the division and finally have success in the postseason. I'm not saying that their best case scenario is a World Series win. National League is really deep. But I'm saying their best case scenario is a National League East division win and at least one series win in the World Series. Playoffs. They could win the World Series. I'm not saying they can't. But their best case is that all those things happen. They stay relatively healthy. Soto and Robles are who we think they are. Patrick Corbin is who we think he is. The bullpen stays together. And the Nats win the division for the fifth time in 8 years and finally have success in the postseason. What's the most likely scenario for the Nationals this year? I think the starting rotation carries them. I do think that Strasburg will probably spend at least 10 or 15 days on the injured list, but I think that he'll be healthy at year's end. I think a bullpen piece is needed at the deadline due to occasional inconsistencies, mainly by Barraclough and Rosenthal, and I think that they'll add somebody at the trade deadline, probably prior to. I think that the offense does show slightly less power without Bryce Harper, but plays smarter baseball, finds ways to create runs, whether it's taking an extra bag, moving a guy over, and situational hitting, which the Nationals had issues with last year. Sacrifice fly, moving a runner over, hitting with two outs and men in scoring position. I think that Soto will show that he's the real deal. I don't know if he'll be an MVP candidate this year, but I think that he'll show that he's a real deal. I think he is a real deal. Rendon earns his extension. I think he will get extended before the end of the season. Robles will have periods where he struggles. It's only natural. He's a 21-year-old kid who's never played a full season in the majors. But I think he'll also have periods of brilliance where he's swiping bags left and right. He's making acrobatic catches in center field. And I think by the end of the season, he'll kind of find his balance. And I think he'll be a real force by the end of the year. And I think the Nats will be in contention all year. And I think they find a way to make the playoffs. I'm not saying that they're going to win the division. It's the toughest division in baseball. But I think they find a way to make the playoffs either as a wild card or winning the division. The National League East, again, is going to be a knockdown, drag-out fight between the Mets, the Phillies, the Braves, and the Nats. And it's going to be a battle of attrition. And it's going to be who can stay the healthiest, who performs the best against each other, and also who performs the best against the Marlins, because that's their most common opponent. I think the Nats will do all of the above. I think that they're the most seasoned team of the four, with the Mets a close second. They have the most playoffs experience of the four. But the big question is going to be, how does their bullpen hold up and how much health do they have? If they have good health and their bullpen holds up, there's no reason to me that they can't win the National League East. But I do think that they find a way to make the playoffs either as a first or second wild card or win the division. I do think that. I don't think they'll be on the outside looking in when it comes to playoff time. Maybe a bit optimistic, but I happen to think that they're one of the most improved teams in baseball. I know everybody loves the moves that the Phillies made with Bryce Harper, David Robertson, trading for Gene Segura. The Mets are getting a lot of love because of the Robbie Cano addition, Wilson Ramos, Edwin Diaz, all of those things. I get it. But the Nationals have the best rotation in the division. And we're going to get ready to go down to the NL East prediction. But the Nats have the best rotation in the division. I think they probably have the deepest lineup in the division, although the Phillies will give them a run for that. And, I like the Nationals' chances. I'm not going to say that they're going to win the National League East, but I think they're going to make the playoffs. All right, so before we get into my National League East prediction and my final thoughts on the Nats this year, I will remind everybody we are affiliated with the DMVSportsNetwork.com. That is the DMVSportsNetwork.com, local DC sports website. Great written content. They're a part of a lot of great podcasts, including ours. Check them out. Check out Half Street High Heat, which is their Nationals-only podcast. Great podcast. Amanda from Winchester, who I've had the pleasure of talking to, is great on that podcast. She's got great insight. So check them out. Check us out on Twitter. It's About Time DC1. That's ITS About Time DC1. Give us a follow. Subscribe to our podcast wherever podcasts are available. And rate us. Let us know what you think. We're always happy to hear from you guys. And again, we always appreciate you guys listening. All right, so let's talk about an NL East prediction. We've talked a lot about the Nats. Let's compare first the starting rotations. We've talked about the Nats, I think, one of the best starting rotations in all of baseball. Scherzer, Strasburg, Corbin, Sanchez, and Hellickson. You go to the Mets, you've got DeGrom, new contract, Syndergaard, and then you've got Steven Matz, Zach Wheeler. The Mets are going to have probably the second best rotation in the division. But, again, health, big question for the Mets. Noah Syndergaard has battled injuries. Jacob DeGrom has been pretty sturdy. Zach Wheeler's a Tommy John guy. Steven Matz battled inconsistencies last year. Mets are deep pitching. I think the Nats are a notch above, especially because of the Nats' top three. But the Mets will be give them a run for their money. Third place in the division when it comes to rotation, I think, is going to go to the Braves, Foltynewicz, and Sean Newcomb. I like what the Braves have in their starting rotation. I think the Phillies are in fourth place, pretty significantly in fourth place. I mean, you have Aaron Nola, one of the best young pitchers in the game, but then it kind of falls off. I mean, they have Jake Arrieta. He's a big name, but he wasn't great last year. And Vince Velasquez has been inconsistent. Their 3-5 is the weakest in the top four. You leave the Marlins out of it in the division. The Phillies, three-starter, they're going to have issues with their starting pitching, especially in that ballpark. They're going to win by scoring runs, bottom line to me. Look at their lineup, the lineups throughout the division. I like the Nats lineup. I don't think it's the best lineup in the division, but I like their lineup from start to finish. I think the Nats have one of the deepest lineups in the division. I think the best lineup in the division, hate to say it, probably goes to the Phillies. The addition of Gene Segura, you still have Reese Hoskins, Bryce Harper. They've got a deep lineup. The Braves, you know, Freddie Freeman, they added Josh Donaldson in the offseason, Ronald Acuna, Ozzy Albies, they might have the best lineup in the division. I think the Nats are probably in the 2-3 slot there when it comes to the lineup, but the Nats are going to be carried by their starting pitching. And then the Mets, you really don't know what you're going to get from the Mets. I mean, you got Michael Conforto. How good can he be? You've got an aging Robbie Cano. Todd Frazier starting the season on the DL. Jed Lowry starting the season on the DL. I got Wilson Ramos who can hit for power. But how many games can he realistically play on two reconstructed knees? The Mets are also going to be carried by their pitching. So if you're asking me, rank the lineups. Rank the starting rotations. I think it's Nats, Mets, Braves, Phillies. Rank the starting lineups. I think you're looking Phillies and Braves are probably 1 and 1A, and I think you could probably flip either one. Nats are third and Mets are fourth. And that's not to slight the Nats or even the Mets. I like the Nats lineup, but you really, if you look at the Phillies lineup, you look at the Braves lineup with Acuna, Ozzy Albies, Freddie Freeman, Josh Donaldson, they're going to be tough outs, man. They're just going to be tough outs. And you look at the Phillies with Reese Hoskins, Bryce Harper, Gene Segura. They're going to be tough outs. Mikel Franco. They're going to be tough outs. They just are. The Nats will be tough outs too. But I think that the Phillies and Braves have a slightly better lineup than the Nats do. And then you go to bullpens. Probably the best closer in the division goes to the Mets. I think that that's probably pretty clear. Edwin Diaz last year, a remarkable season. I mean, he had a 5.3 WAR, 2.64 ERA. His career is a 5.3 WAR. last year, he had a 1 point. Wait a minute. Sorry. I lost it for a second. Last year, he had 124 strikeouts in 73 innings, had 57 saves, and a 1.96 ERA. He's 24 years old. I think he's the best closer in the division. I think the second best closer in the division until Craig Kimbrel signs is Sean Doolittle. Phillies have David Robertson. And the Braves have good arms, but nobody that really puts fear in you like an Edwin Diaz does. So I think if you're going bullpens, I think you got to give the Mets the edge. They got Jurys Familia back. I think their back end of the bullpen is the strongest. And I think that you probably would put the Nats second with that, with the Barraclough, Rosenthal, Doolittle, and their potential. And then Phillies and Braves, however you want to put them. But again, I think the Nats, their bullpen situation is pretty precarious right now. You got to be concerned about how durable they can be, especially Rosenthal coming off of Tommy John, how consistent they can be. Rosenthal and Barraclough have shown issues with command this year. And for the Nats, what kind of step Wander Suero takes. But I like the Nats bullpen, especially compared to the Phillies and Braves, until Craig Kimbrel signs. And that's a big if, whoever he signs with. But the Mets are going to have a very good bullpen. If the Mets have the lead going into the seventh inning, they're going to feel pretty good about it. With Jurys Familia and Edwin Diaz anchoring the back of their bullpen, they're going to feel really good about it. Their real question is going to be getting a bridge to that beyond DeGrom and Syndergaard, and also scoring enough runs, in my opinion. So that's how I would compare the big three, you know, rotations, lineup, bullpen among the four. How do I rank the teams going into the season? And I'm documenting this. I'm putting it. I'm recording it so that people can make fun of me at the end of the season. My rankings as the season starts. I have the Braves and Nationals tied atop the division. I think they're too close to call. I think they're a 1A, 1B situation. And I think that there are too many factors going into who will win the division to determine who's better right now. I'd love to say that the Nats are better. I can't say that. The Braves have had a quieter offseason than the Nationals and the Phillies, but the Braves have a lot of homegrown talent. They added Josh Donaldson, who could give them a big advantage. I don't like the Braves, but I like the team that they have. And I think they could be an under-the-radar, surprisingly, because they won the division last year, an under-the-radar division winner because of the press that the Phillies are getting with Bryce Harper and the press that the Nats got early in the offseason because they signed Patrick Corbin. But I think the Braves and the Nats are tied at number one. I think the Phillies are a very close number two. I think they're a very close number two. I think their starting rotation is what's going to let them down. If they add a starting pitcher in the middle of the season, that could completely change the situation. But I think that their pitching, starting rotation, and bullpen, they're going to have to outslug teams. And they can do that in that ballpark. But they're going to have to outslug teams. And Bryce Harper's going to have to be what he was in 2015. Can he be that? Yes. Will he be that? Big question mark. I think the Mets are in third. Yes, they have a dynamic back end of the bullpen. Yes, they have a very good 1-2-3 starting combination. But Syndergaard's health concerns, Wheeler's somewhat health concerns, and the age and injury concern in their lineup, they could be derailed easier than any team of the other three. I am not a believer in the Mets. I'm not. I love Jacob deGrom. I think he's a phenomenal pitcher, but he had a historically great season last year, and the Mets still finished in fourth place in the division. I love Jacob deGrom. I like Noah Syndergaard. I think he's got lights out stuff, but I think that the torque of his movement, his fastball, is a lot on his body. Syndergaard stays healthy all year. Mets will be in contention. But again, their offense, you know, they're starting the season with Jed Lowrie and Todd Frazier on the DL. How healthy can Wilson Ramos stay? A lot of question marks with the Mets. So I would say Braves, Nats tied at the top as the season starts. Phillies a close second, Mets in third. Any of the four teams can win the division. I think that's clear. I think the Mets are the most easily that could be derailed. I think the Phillies have probably the most boom and also the biggest bust. I think the Phillies could win, somehow put together 100 wins, but I also think that they could put together 80 wins if things don't match up, especially with their pitching. I think the Nationals and Braves will be consistent because I think that they're the deepest rosters throughout. But time will tell. I'll probably look like an idiot at the end of the season. The one thing I think we're all certain of is that the Marlins won't make any moves. They'll be in fifth place in the division. But I think that the National League East could very easily sport three teams in the playoffs. I think most likely it'll be two. I think you'll see another wild card come from the Central. Or maybe even the West. I mean, the Dodgers and the Rockies, they're going to beat up on each other. But the Giants, the D-backs, and even the Padres, who improved, that's a weaker division than the Central and the East. But I think you'll see two teams, at least two teams, come out of the National League East in the playoffs. And I think the Nats will be one of them. I'm not saying they're going to win the division, but I think they'll be one of them. All right, let's get into my final thoughts. Or my final thought. We haven't done one of these in a while because Josh hasn't been here. But I do have a final thought. Kind of a rant, but a final thought. I'm just going to enjoy this time as a Nationals fan. Especially what's going on in Ashburn with the Redskins. What's going on with the Wizards. Enjoy this time as a Nationals fan. We've been lucky the last 7 years. They've won four division titles. The ownership has spent money. They've put a competitive team on the field the last 7 years. Things didn't work out in 2013, 2015, and 2018, but it wasn't for lack of trying. The ownership spends money. They're aggressive. Mike Rizzo is aggressive. He's done a fantastic job building this team from within and also from the outside. Enjoy it. Because of the Patrick Corbin signing, the emergence of Juan Soto, most likely an extension for Anthony Rendon, we've got at least another two or three years of contention. The NL East is going to be a juggernaut for at least the next few years, and the Nats will be in the conversation. Enjoy it. Enjoy the 6 months of the regular season where every night you have something to watch and every night is exciting. Enjoy it. I remember 2006 through 2011. I remember those seasons when the game would be on, but it'd be kind of an afterthought. There wasn't much to watch. This is not that. We are very, very lucky as Nationals fans. Tom Boswell said today in an article, watching the Nationals and Yankees yesterday, that those were two of maybe 10 teams that are World Series worthy this year. The Nationals are one of those 10 teams. They have a payroll over $200 million. The Lerners have spent the money. Rizzo has done the work. This is something to enjoy. This is, without the championships so far, this is the Redskins from 1981 to 1992. That's what this is. We're in the middle of that. And I say it to my wife all the time. I say, the reason why I want to watch every game is because 10 years from now, if the Nats have fallen on hard times, I don't want to regret that I didn't watch them when they were flourishing and they were one of the best teams in baseball. I say the same thing to you guys. Enjoy it. Don't think, when you're in April, May, June, July, don't think about October. Don't stress about the fact that the Nats have never won a series in the playoffs. Don't stress about that. Enjoy the moment. We've got the best pitcher on the planet, Max Scherzer. You might have the best 20-year-old player of all time in Juan Soto. You got the most underrated player, in my opinion, in baseball, and as voted on by the players in The Athletic today, and in Anthony Rendon. You got probably one of the best starting rotations in all of baseball. And you've got an ownership group that if you get to the trade deadline and there's a hole that needs to be filled, they will fill it. And you have more people coming. Carter Kieboom's available. Luis Gonzalez is coming. Enjoy it. That's all I'm going to say. I'm going to enjoy it. I'm not going to stress about October until October comes. I'm going to enjoy it. And I believe that from mid-August until the end of the season, it's going to be unlike anything we have ever seen here. It's going to be a real pennant race. You're going to have two or three teams in the National League East that are just duking it out. And the Nationals are going to be one of them, and it's going to be a lot of fun. So enjoy it while you can. that's all I've got. Reminder, we're affiliated with the DMVSportsNetwork.com. That is DMVSportsNetwork.com. Give them a follow on Twitter at DMV underscore SN. Follow us on Twitter. It's About Time, DC1. ITS, About Time, DC1. Rate us. Subscribe to our podcast. Let us know what you think. We're always happy to hear from you guys. And as always, we are grateful that you listen. Until next week, when we will finally have real baseball to talk about. See you guys. Take care.